Now, back to Lansing's only live afternoon talk show, Ebling and You, on more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back, Jack and Scott, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS. Scott, officials in Genesee County, including Prosecutor David Layton, now confirming that the number of related attacks, 15, not 13, there were two others now that they have determined are significantly similar, and the ages now have expanded a little bit between 17 and 60, and they've been short, stocky, tall, slim, doesn't matter. So apparently he is a little less discriminate than we imagined before, and you were telling me about another connection in terms of the truck, right?
Yeah, one of the main reasons they thought it might be together in Virginia is the truck. People saw the same vehicle or a vehicle matching the description. It's somewhere from the range of a 1995 to 2006 four-door Chevy S10 or Blazer or a GMC Jimny. But the main thing is the color of it. It's a two-tone green over beige or gold. And that's the vehicle that's been seen in most locations.
Very interesting to hear from Harold Kopis in terms of a profile. I'm not sure I agree with his conclusion that when 15 African Americans are stabbed by a white person, that there is no connection there. Let's bring in Todd Haywood from the Michigan Messenger. And as I mentioned before, he has been on top of the Enbridge oil spill as much as anyone could be. Hello, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
What is the latest? When we talked with you in studio about a week and a half ago, you had just left a press conference. You were investigating a lot of different ramifications of this. Your opinion now of what Enbridge has done since that press conference?
Well, I mean, I think it's important to remember that EPA is actually in control of the direct response and cleanup, mm-hmm. and that's really key to remember. That happened about 48 hours after the spill, and it was after the governor had criticized the response, and she said it just wasn't adequate enough. Mm-hmm. She went on to say it was wholly inadequate a couple of days later. So EPA really is running the show down there. They have made significant strides in cleaning up the river. Over the weekend, they were able to actually remove the ruptured pipeline, and photos of that are now available through the National Transportation Safety Board, which is investigating this. And the pipeline breach was 6.5 feet long.
So this is a little bit like a plane crash where they go in and they find the wreckage, perform an analysis, and then try to piece together the scenario of how it happened.
That's absolutely correct.
All right. Now, we have heard a lot of criticism of Enbridge, and Mark Schauer, 7th District Congressman, has been very outspoken in this regard. And I've heard some people say that this shows what a fine public servant he is and how dedicated he is to his constituents. And I've heard other people say that now we're getting to the point where it's almost playing politics and he's not criticizing EPA as much as criticizing Enbridge, when in fact the EPA has been in charge of this process.
Well, I think it's important to remember that the criticisms that the congressman is leveling deal more with the initial identification of the leak, mm-hmm. and not the response afterwards. And I think that there are some legitimate concerns about the fact that the congressman is not raising questions about the EPA response.
Okay.
But the reality is that, you know, part of this learning process in order to prevent this from happening again with this line, and remember there's actually another one that goes across the UP and under the Straits of Mackinac, mm-hmm. And then this line goes over and under the St. Clair River. Part of preventing that issue is figuring out what happened.
And I guess a lot of the criticism has dealt with the definition of immediate in terms
correct.
Of the reporting of this, correct?
Correct. And the interesting thing is that the regulations are at best muddy.
Okay.
And if you look at our coverage on that after the congressman came out and said they violated that timing, we did a whole lot of digging, and we actually pulled up those regulations and we linked them because it's not as black and white as anybody wants it to be, whether it's Enbridge or it's the congressman. And I think we're going to see some legislative change on that through congressman's introduction of legislation on that issue.
Well, that was my next question. What have we learned from this?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that we're learning, and I think it's important to emphasize the ING there, we're still learning vast amounts of information. And I think, you know, I spent yesterday afternoon a good hour on the phone with a pipeline expert trying to understand how these systems operate. They're incredibly complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And this expert said that it's not uncommon for a pipeline operator who's located in Edmonton, Alberta, to get over 1,000 alarms on over the course of an 8-hour shift.
1,000 alarms?
Yeah, that's not uncommon at all. So they have to figure out how, when they're watching that, to sift through that noise and find out which alarms are real and which ones are the result of trying to push incredibly viscous liquid thousands of miles over pipelines,
mm-hmm.
up hills, under hills, and around the world, basically, is getting caught or is slowing up or that sort of stuff. You know, what's a leak versus what's a slowdown in pressure because your liquid is a little thicker than it should be.
As you point out in your story today in the Michigan Messenger, this is eerily similar to a Minnesota leak in 2002, correct?
Absolutely. And that was, I came across that when I was reading over the weekend. I came across that 2002 NTSB report, and the rupture picture, which at that point we still hadn't seen pictures of the ruptured pipeline removed
right.
from Marshall, but the descriptions of the alarms going off, of ultimately the spill and that sort of stuff were all just remarkably common denominators, to the point that we really felt like we needed to ask some questions and put that out front and say, you know, here are the similarities, here are the differences. Could this be a hint that there was already some learnings that we've missed?
And what's your conclusion to that?
You know, I think the pipeline expert was really clear on that
mm-hmm.
it's still too early to tell. You know, when mm-hmm. you have a rupture, that traditional fish mouth rupture, part of the problem is that there are a half dozen different causes for that specific type of rupture. And so it really requires some very detailed metallurgical testing to figure out exactly what the cause was. So I think we're looking for another 12 months minimum before we really know what caused that rupture.
Well, I'm sure you'll stay on top of this situation, and we will check back with you. Todd Haywood, investigative reporter for Michigan Messenger, and you can read Todd's pieces MichiganMessenger.com. Thanks so much for joining us, Todd.
Thanks for having me, Jack.
All right. We'll be back, and we're going to talk with Lansing City Councilman Eric Hewitt. We'll find out what's going on at council this week and a reaction with Virge Bernero, now being Democratic gubernatorial candidate. We'll be right back with more on Ebling and You.